Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Here we go, hour two on a Thursday. Tristan Thompson, Cleveland Cavaliers, going to be joining us in about 12 minutes. It's L.A. We're live. It's the Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. Joy Taylor is joining me. Where are you going this weekend?
I'm chilling.
I'm going on a boat tomorrow.
Boat?
Boat, kids. Wake surfing.
Wake surfing?
Oh, yeah.
You wake surf?
Oh, love it. So much fun.
You live life on the edge.
Edge.
Like, I tried, water skiing?
Well, wake surfing, water skiing.
Yeah, same thing. Well, the water skiing, you have the skis on, right? It's not like one board.
Yeah, no, this is one board. It's way safer than water skiing where you are a mile behind the boat, you're crashing really hard. Wake surfing, if you don't get up.
I just couldn't keep my, the skis right.
That's right.
So I couldn't get up.
So wake surfing's just,
activities with all this equipment is not for me.
Love it. I told you before, when I retire, I'll ski 75 days a year. And then in the summer, I'll wake surf about 10. And
I cried the first time I skied.
You cried?
I cried.
Well, when you first start, it's hard. You do the pizza thing where you put your skis in the...
Well, okay, yeah. So my sister and my friend took me on this hill. There's a mountain people ski on like an hour outside of Pittsburgh. And they're like, yeah, just do the pizza thing. But it wasn't the hill that you learn on that's like this. And that's not how you stop anyway. That is a lie. That is a lie, America. So you do not stop with the pizza thing. So that makes you go faster.
You skied outside of Pittsburgh?
Yeah. But it's still snow on a mountain. But the pizza thing makes you go faster. You have to turn your body. That's why skiers go like this. They don't just go like the ones that go like this are flying off of a giant, ramp into the sky.
Yeah.
That's fake news.
Yeah. Well, skiing takes a lot of time. I fell a lot.
It does take. Yes. Well, that's what happened. I fell a lot and then I start crying.
So I am one of the things I never feel like I have to defend the powerful. I mean, LeBron and Tom Brady are great. I don't have to defend them. But I do. There is something in my genetic makeup, my DNA, where it bothers me when I think somebody's way better than he's given credit for. Maybe I feel like sometimes, maybe that's a personal thing. I don't know. But it does bother me when there's an athlete and I'm like, can you give him a little love here? Like, he's not getting respect. Derek Carr cracks me up. So there's an article out today about the five or six quarterbacks that have a lot to gain and lose in the NFL, and they talk about Derek Carr. And I'm like, they're talking about Derek Carr is going to get replaced by Marcus Mariota. Okay, Derek Carr is way better than Marcus Mariota. Now, Nick Foles and Trubisky, I would go with Foles. Derek Carr's good. Let me give you an example. Derek Carr has largely been carrying this S show for about 5 years. He's been carrying them. Last year, he had a rookie running back and a rookie wide receiver and a new wide receiver and a new tight end, 4,000 yards, passer rating over 100, 70% completion percentage. Are you kidding me? Yet he's going to get replaced. Those are great numbers on a terrible defensive team where he has to pass, usually because they trail by the third quarter by double digits. Derek Carr is the only quarterback left in the league that's good and won't get any love. It's very Tony Romo. Let me talk about Tony Romo for a second. So Tony Romo was classic because Tony Romo played for the Cowboys. And the Raiders are a big brand, by the way. But Tony Romo made some really big gaffes in some big television games. And then he dropped the snap. Tony Romo dropped the snap against Seattle in a playoff game. And it's like, Tony Romo's not clutch. Hell, if that's true, Tony Romo was unbelievably clutch. He's the fourth highest passer rating in the history of the NFL in the fourth quarter. Tony Romo was totally clutch. I argued it for years, but because he had a couple of big gaffes in big Cowboy massive rating TV games, he's not clutch. Tony Romo has 29 career fourth quarter come from behind drives. That's more than Joe Montana. Okay, Tony Romo was clutch. He's clutch. Really clutch. All-time clutch. Fourth all-time, passer rating fourth quarter. And this is Derek Carr. Because of the instability of the Raiders, he's on his fourth coach. Because the stadium's a mess. The owner's the poorest owner. that I think the Raiders bring down his brand. I think Derek Carr is better than the organization he plays for. Last year, he had the second highest completion percentage to Drew Brees. He was eighth in yards with a bunch of rookies. He was a new receiver, a new tight end, and a rookie wide receiver. He was ninth in passer rating, above Aaron Rodgers and Deshaun Watson. And by the way, he doesn't throw any picks. Don't we give Aaron Rodgers all this credit? We're always like, Aaron never throws picks. He had all the good and never the bad. Derek Carr doesn't throw any picks. And so I thought today, I'll do my my blind resume game with Derek Carr, that the Raiders pull his brand down. Now, I don't think Derek's a top five quarterback. I have him about 11th or 12th. But this idea that Bruce Gradkowski was on our show yesterday, senior analyst, pro football focused, analyst, analytics. Here's what he said about the Mariota Derek Carr comparison.
I don't think Mariota holds Carr's jockstrap, to be honest with you. I think Carr, the way he is as a passer, the dude can sling it. I mean, he can make plays. And he's a top 10 passing grade for us last year. He's been in the top 10, you know, two times out of his career. Mariota's never been there. Mariota's never sniffed more than a 72 passing grade. And Carr has had a 77 passing grade three seasons already. So I just think as a passer, Carr is above and beyond.
Listen, Derek Carr had a year in 2016 where he was a borderline MVP. If you remember that year, he was 12-3. He had 7 fourth quarter game-winning drives. Now, I'm not putting him in the elite category of the Lamars and the Russells and the Rodgers. I'm not. But good God, folks, he's the only really good top 12 quarterback in the league that gets no love from anybody. Hell, his coach doesn't like him. So let's do blind resume. So here are the stats that matter. What's your completion percentage? What's your passer rating? And what's your TD to interception ratio? So for our listeners on radio, he completes 64% of his throws. His passer rating's a 91. And he throws 2.3 touchdowns for every interception. So blind resume. The guy next to him has the same completion percentage, slightly higher passer rating, and less of a TD interception ratio. So who is that? Oh, it's Phillip Rivers. And Phillip Rivers, by the way, last 3 years has had unbelievable weapons, has a great GM. And oh, by the way, many of you say he's better than Eli Manning. You'd vote him into the Hall of Fame. So Derek Carr's career numbers are, and by the way, the best GM in the NFL is arguably Chris Ballard, Indianapolis. He went and signed no good Phillip Rivers. Okay, give me another one. Okay, this quarterback, blind resume, has a lower completion percentage than Carr, slightly higher passer rating, and much lower TD to interception ratio. Much lower. Who is that? Oh, Joe Montana. Okay. The GOAT. All right. Yeah, okay. See who's winning this game? Okay. And by the way, ownership Raiders, not good. Coaching stability, not good. Defense, always playing from behind. That hurts. Not good. All right, let's do another blind resume. Because you could say, well, that one, Colin, is a kind of a generation thing. It was a different game. Okay. So this radio listener's completion percentage is lower than Carr. Passer rating is slightly lower than Carr. And the TD to interception ratio is lower than Carr. Who is this? Oh, Matt Stafford. Okay. Number one pick, Matt Stafford. Well, I mean, it's the Lions. Excuse me, it's the Raiders. And Matt Stafford, by the way, had Calvin Johnson, who, in my opinion, after Randy Moss, is the best college wide receiver prospect I ever saw. Let's do another passer rating. Or another blind resume. Okay, this one is, I love this game. Okay, this quarterback has a slightly higher completion percentage, slightly higher passer rating, and a slightly lower TD to interception ratio. Who's this? Okay, the guy's going to get into the Hall of Fame, Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan's going to get into the Hall of Fame if he has 4 more years like this. MVP. And by the way, Matt Ryan's had better ownership. Not even question, Arthur Blank. Way better ownership. Very good GM, Thomas Dimitroff. Always had star receivers. He had Tony Gonzalez, Roddy White, Julio Jones. Now they had the Ridley kid. I mean, they've always had great. And they had Kyle Shanahan for a couple years as an offensive coordinator. Look at that. The passer rating is higher for Matt Ryan. Not staggering. But you keep telling me Derek Carr. I'm not saying Derek Carr. And by the way, I've always said Matt Ryan. I have Matt Ryan as the 9th or 10th best quarterback in the league. Every time I do it, I say Matt's about 10 to me. I don't think he's a great athlete. Don't think he has a great arm. But he's about top 10 quarterback in his prime. I got Carr at 12. There you go. Marcus Mariota's not Derek Carr. Come on, watch the games. It's not close. Oh, I got another one. Give me another blind resume. I'm dominating this game, right? I'm dominating the world. So this guy has a significantly lower completion percentage than Derek Carr. This guy's got a slightly lower passer rating and a lower TD to interception ratio. Who is this guy? The heck? Andrew Luck. All right. Now, Andrew Luck played with really bad offensive lines. Carr's offensive line's pretty good.
We did that just to make you mad.
But I think the point stands.
I think it really all derailed for Derek Carr after that injury. Because that year in 2016 that you're talking about where he was in the conversation for MVP, that injury just took him off the map. And ever since then, he's just been fighting to get his respect back.
And some people think that the post-injury quarterbacks don't want to get hit as much. So he lets the knock I've heard on Derek Carr is post-injury. He lets go of the ball too quick. He doesn't want to get hit again. He knows another injury. He knows, first of all, rehab's brutal. Nobody likes rehab. So when Tom Brady got hurt the following year, he would get ticked off if you got next to his knees.
He still doesn't like it.
He doesn't like anybody by his knees. So, you know, the knock on Derek Carr psychologically, he lets it go a little too quick. He doesn't sit in the pocket. But I will say this, the Raiders drafted 3 more wide receivers. They're going to score points this year. But you got to give me a break on Derek Carr can't play. You got to give me a break on Mariota's going to beat him out. Like, they're not the same guy. Carr's better. Tristan Thompson, Cavaliers. Thoughts on what he saw with the Clippers last night, what he saw with the Lakers and the Bucks, being a big favorite going into the first round. Tristan's been there. He joins us next.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Tonight on FS1, we've got some baseball action coming your way as Christian Yelich leads the Brewers against Nelson Cruz and the Twins. It all starts at 6:30 Eastern on FS1 and the Fox Sports app.
Good to have you in Lowe's Home Projects, do-it-yourself projects. More time than ever now at home, Lowe's.com. Tristan Thompson's played in the NBA, still doing it for almost a decade, and he is joining us now live from his den. All right, so listen, I could say Patrick Beverley didn't play, Paul George was bad. Do you take anything from the Clippers' loss at all? Anything that worries you?
No, it's one game. It's one game at the end of the day. I think my biggest concern if I am on the Clippers is, you know, let's just get Paul George healthy. I saw that he had the ice bag on his shoulder last night doing interviews. And Pat Bev, who's a big part of the team, especially against the Mavs guarding Luka, you know, Pat Bev can kind of, you know, pick him up 94 feet, kind of the Dellavedova for the Cavs back when we were making our championship run. So I think it's just about getting healthy. I think Clippers should take care of this and win this series. So for the long marathon, we just got to make sure, or they got to make sure that Paul George is ready to go.
You know, it's interesting. I was saying this, that when you go back to the Cleveland team, you had Kyrie, Kevin Love, were also historically great scorers, and LeBron. And then you went to Miami and Wade and Bosch and Ray Allen had historically been great scorers. But this Laker team is LeBron, AD, and then there's no historic great scorers. So when I saw LeBron the other night and everybody was bragging about his assists, and we know he's a great passer, I thought, this is not the year to be the great passer. They need 34 from LeBron. They didn't always need that in Cleveland. They didn't always need it in Miami. Do you worry that Hassan Whiteside, a little Roy Hibbert, a little in LeBron's head, he's passing up scoring opportunities, and that LeBron has become a little passive in terms of just going to the basket and getting points for him?
I think for LeBron, I think tonight's game is going to be definitely more aggressive. I like the comparison with the Roy Hibbert and Hassan Whiteside. Yeah, Hassan is going to try to block every shot, but we've played against Hassan when we were Cleveland, when he was with Miami, when he was blocking shots. So LeBron knows how to attack the rim against guys that are shot blockers. I think LeBron definitely has to be more aggressive and attack the rim. I think for game one, he was trying to figure out which guys he can count on or who's ready to make this long playoff run. And obviously, I think that they got to go ahead and give Deion and JR a look, especially when it comes to making shots and shooting it, because they're packing the paint. They're forcing AD and Bron. They're forcing them to you know, pass it up. Or if you're going to score all the points, nobody else can score. So I think that LeBron's got to be on against Golden State when you come in, you know, score 40, 15, and 12. He's got to go all the way playoff active mode and go ahead and tie the series up.
You know, it's interesting. Joy and I were talking about this. The young guys in this bubble are just having a ball, but they don't have kids. They're not married.
Yeah.
Older guys, married kids, business opportunities, a lot of them, LeBron doesn't look quite right. Giannis, you know, he's been in the league now 7-8 years. Some of the veteran players feel a little uneasy with the bubble. I don't know if Joy and I are grasping for straws, but the young players in this league are just, I mean, they just have so much enthusiasm for it. Do you think this bubble has been a little negative for people that have a broader life in the NBA, families, kids, and they just miss them at this point after a month?
Yeah, I think it's definitely difficult just because, you know, as an NBA player, and I think a lot of the guys that I've played with, we're so used to a routine where it's come in the morning, shoot around, come home, nap, see your family, see your kids, pregame meal, play basketball, come home, have family dinner. So for the older guys, it's the routine is all jacked up because they've went 7+ years having the same routine, and especially guys that have playoff experience, like, you know, like the LeBrons and the older guys in the league with playoff experience, that the young guys is like AU to them. They're just like, hey, I got no kids.
Right.
I got no wife. I'm just going to play my video games and be on social media and just be a young kid again. Like they were in college probably about a year ago.
Yeah.
So for the veteran guys, they're probably like, I just need to go home and have a family dinner. So I think that is annoying for them, and it probably messes with their whole rhythm. But I think at the end of the day, it's basketball, and you got to just figure it out, right? Like, they're going to throw wrinkles at you. You got to figure it out.
What do you make of I've said before, is Philadelphia is wearing me out. I'm more of a Simmons guy than an Embiid guy, although I think Embiid right now is the better player. I think the NBA is moving to a sport, has been for a long time. You got to shoot threes or be able to pass the ball to guys that shoot threes. And I watch Philadelphia right now, Tristan, and they're a mess. What do you make of them right now?
Yeah, it was tough. You know, whenever you see your star player frustrated, I understand Joel's frustration because he wants to win so bad. And you know, Ben's my guy, so I believe in him too. And I think what's hurting Philly right now is that people always want to nitpick about Ben not being able to shoot threes, not being a shooter. But look at all the other things he does. First of all, he's 6'10 at the point guard position.
Yeah.
Defensively, that's just a headache at the top of the key with his arms open, spread wide, covering all that ground. I mean, he's up for probably, you know, first team all defense. Like,
yeah,
not having him there to check Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum or even when Gordon Hayward was playing, like having that 6'10 length guarding you with a guy that's with 6'6", like that can move like a little two guard. That is so huge for them defensively that they're missing. You know, Shake Milton's been doing a great job for what he could do, but at the end of the day, Ben Simmons gets it in transition. He might not be a freight train going full court, but he's definitely Escalade at 6'10", coming at your head, full court, attacking the rim.
And finally, Tristan Thompson joining us. So I watched Luka. And, you know, with superstars in the NBA, you get kind of the same performance whenever they play. LeBron, Harden, Giannis, pretty much the same stat line. I'm looking at Luka this morning, and there are six guys in the NBA that I can tell that essentially you get the same performance every time they play. LeBron, Harden, Giannis, Kawhi, Luka, and Kevin Durant next year, where I get the same number, my consistent six. And I look at that and I think, are those the six best players in the league right now? Like, what are we supposed to make of Luka? He had one bad game all year, Tristan, against Denver. The dude is 28 and he's a great assist guy. He's 28 and 10 every night.
Yeah, no, I'm a big fan of Luka. I like what he's doing. I think the NBA is definitely trying to go global, and I think Luka is definitely helping that. It's similar to what they did with Giannis in terms of, you know, they're going to want to pump him, but he's backing up with his stats. I think he's got to win a series or take this to seven games for us to even like consider putting him top five. I think it's too early. You know, I know it's a second year and he's putting up crazy numbers, but I mean, if you look at those other guys, they got, you know, years of experience, numbers, wins, playoff series wins. So if Luka could pull the miraculous, do what Golden State did to Dirk back when Dirk was number one seed. If they could do that to the Clippers, then we definitely have a conversation of him being top five.
By the way, the NBA put three of the four Milwaukee Buck games at 1 o'clock. So when you were playing with LeBron, you guys didn't get 1 o'clock games. They put you in prime time. You knew you were going to be on the night
game.
That's
nap time.
That's
nap time. 1 o'clock is nap time.
That's right. So Giannis now, Mr. MVP of the league, he's playing at one. Is the NBA telling us Giannis isn't that interesting? He's just good.
No, I wouldn't say that. I think we all know how great Giannis is. We know his numbers. His numbers are like Will Chamberlain's. Like, you know, it's 34, 20, and 10. His numbers are great, but at the end of the day, it's bigger than just, you know, the Milwaukee Bucks. At the end of the day, it's the business of basketball, right? Are more people going to watch Milwaukee games, or would they rather watch, you know, maybe Luka or one of the bigger markets? So it's bigger than that. But if I was a player on the Bucks, it's like, listen, we need to just focus on Orlando. You know, if you guys are playing us at 1 o'clock, use that as motivation. Use that as motivation to earn those times and keep showing the league that you guys can be consistent and be great. So, I mean, I think Raptors had the same situation when they had DeMar DeRozan and they never got Christmas games. They kept saying, you know, the NBA needs to start putting us on TV. They need to respect us. It's just like, you know what, just keep the focus, the main focus, and then it's winning ball games and staying alive in these playoffs in the bubble. So handle that, and then you'll get your primetime games.
Great seeing you. I love this. At Tristan Thompson, we're in the bubble. He's in his den. That's his bubble. And I had buddies, the last time you were on, they were like, oh, I love Tristan Thompson. Bring Tristan Thompson on more. I love having him on the show. So it's great seeing you, and thanks again for coming on.
No, appreciate it. Thanks for having me. Have a great weekend.
All right, you too. Joy Taylor with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herd Line News.
Well, the Jazz bounced back in game two against the Nuggets with a decisive 124-105 win. Even though Donovan Mitchell was held only 6 points in the first half, the rest of the team stepped up and got the Jazz to a 61-48 lead at halftime. Then in the third, Mitchell found his opening and scored 21 of his 30 points to build a double-digit lead, and Utah was able to tie the series at one game apiece.
Sometimes you just get hot. Like, that game was just like, there are times you watch games in the NBA and think, oh, it's just going to be Utah's. That's going to be Utah's game.
Well, it's also, you know, this is what the playoffs are about, right? This is all we've been talking about for the past couple days is when your star isn't doing what they need to do or doing what you expect of them, is someone else going to step up and make it happen? Like, that's what we're talking about with LeBron. That's what the concern is with the Bucks and Giannis. And obviously, you know, we still think that the Jazz and Nuggets are a year away from being where they need to be to make significant noise in the playoffs. But this is a good sign. This is going to be a long series with the Nuggets and Jazz. It'll be fun. And I think it's a development thing for these two teams. Like, they both have great players.
Well,
they're gonna trade blows in this series.
Yeah, and Utah's good defensively. Gobert's great. Quinn Snyder's a good defensive coach. Donovan Mitchell can play defense. They'll grind you. So it's like one of those series where you're gonna have to earn it. I kind of feel Utah feels like to me Boston. The difference is Bogdanovich got hurt for Utah, and he's a little bit of their Tatum where, you know, you get 22 a night. But Utah, I loved Utah until that injury. Like, I thought Utah was going to be a huge pain in the butt.
Well, I still picked the Jazz to win this series.
All
but
right.
Either way, I think it's going to go to seven. Jordan Clarkson had a playoff career high of 26 points, and the Jazz shot 51.7% from the field and made 23-pointers. So that's going to be tough for anybody to overcome. So the Patriots have been giving all three quarterbacks reps in training camp this week. And according to Patriots beat writer Greg Bedard, Jarrett Stidham did not look good today. That's kind of been the reports consistently on Stidham through camp.
Oh.
He said Stidham needs to pick it up or things will be over for him quickly.
Yeah.
Then he also followed that up by saying not that Cam Newton is grabbing hold of it. So I don't know if Cam's not also doing well.
So Jarrett Stidham, who is just going to be unbelievable.
Yeah, it was the future of the Patriots. That's all I could hear
for
3 months.
Every single ESPN analyst. God, if I had to hear another.
Well, I think I just kept hearing it from Patriots fans, like where it's not over and Stidham's been in the room.
Can it, nobody, you know, it's just like when you hear all these analysts, it's, oh, I'm hearing stuff. Literally, Stidham was in that camp for a year behind Tom Brady. Tom's 43, and they wanted Tom back. When Tom was 39, 40 with Garoppolo and a better quarterback, they wanted to get Tom out of the room. They wanted Tom out.
We didn't hear a peep about Jared Stidham until Tom Brady left.
And then when he left, oh, this guy. They had him for every practice for a year. Tom was 43 and expensive, and they wanted Tom back.
Well, another Patriots reporter, Jeff Howe, also talked about Stidham's poor performance, reporting that he went 2-for-6 with 2 interceptions today and has thrown 7 interceptions over the last 3 days.
Oh, my God.
The general consensus from multiple Patriots reporters is that Cam is winning the quarterback battle, but almost by default. He doesn't have any standout moments, but he's making fewer mistakes. I don't want to get crazy about camp. Obviously, this is not great for Stidham, but
I think we're both skeptics on Stidham.
Just pause on all. Well, I've been a skeptic of Stidham.
Literally,
it doesn't even bring me any happiness to be right that he's not doing well in camp. It's just like everything you just said. Who is Jared Stidham, and why? Just because you hang out in a room with Tom Brady, do you then become the heir apparent to the greatest quarterback of all time?
Listen, like, Lamar Jackson.
You got to get on the field.
Baltimore had a Super Bowl MVP quarterback, Joe Flacco. And there were talks, like, with Lamar Jackson, like, with that, not their first year, were like, oh, my God, you should see him at practice. Like, it's absurd. Like, Alex Smith, a winning quarterback, playoff wins, was at camp, and all the talk was, you're not going to believe Mahomes. We didn't hear anything for a year with Stidham. So you're going to, I'm supposed to believe he's just going to light this thing. He's got a good arm, not great. His size is average. He was a good college quarterback, not special. Come on, let's stop trying to sell me stuff.
Yes, it did feel like we're getting sold.
Everybody at the other network was selling me on this guy.
If I want to buy it, I'll decide.
Yeah.
I make my own decisions.
Yes.
Finally, many pro leagues have found success using a bubble for their restarts. Obviously, the NFL is not doing that for the regular season, but during the latest NFL competition committee call, Sean Payton suggested that they do the same for the postseason for the NFL. VP of Football Operations Troy Vincent said they're not ruling that out as a possibility, that all things are being considered. Any sort of bubble scenario would need the support from the players' union, but obviously this is kind of a long ways off. But, you know, the NFL has had the privilege of watching all the other leagues start, seeing some of the issues and non-issues and how they've done it and the protocols and how everything has worked.
Why couldn't you have NFC, you know, I mean, you could have 3 games in Dallas in 2 days, you know, something like that, 3 games in Arizona and then Super Bowl. I don't, be honest with you, remember, the Super Bowl is January. That's flu season. And we don't have a vaccine. I don't think it's a bad idea at all.
I don't think it's – no, I think the bubble is the best idea. It makes the most sense. You're isolating and testing and then keeping everyone away from everyone else that has the virus. It's literally why we had a stay-at-home order. Stay away from everyone.
Right.
So it makes the most sense. It's just for football, there's no facility in existence that could house all of the NFL and all of its teams and players and personnel in order to have a bubble for the season. It's not feasible. It doesn't work. However, baseball's been able to do it without a bubble. So it is possible as long as everyone follows the protocols and they do the testing. The thing that usually would and may end up being the wrench in this idea is, you know, home field advantage. But we're likely not going to have fans at most of the stadiums. I know Dallas is talking about making it happen. And even if you do, it's going to be very limited fans. But, you know, Tristan was just talking about it. You have your routine. You sleep in your own bed. You're around your family. You're in your own home. Like, there is something to that you know, it's a huge distraction when you're being removed from that. And if the NFL is not doing that during the regular season, it might be a bigger deal to players to do the bubble. But again, this is so far off from, you know, who knows what the situation is going to be internationally with the virus by the time we get to the NFL postseason. But it's good that they're considering all options.
Good stuff, Joy, with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
Former Brown Jets head coach Eric Mangini is going to join us live next. Camps, bullets are flying, camps open. I sat yesterday for 30 minutes, took a nap, woke up, 30, 40 minutes of just looking at NFL camp video. My God. Swear to God, it was so good. My life was so good at about 4 o'clock yesterday. Corona and NFL camp video.
You love camp video.
Especially there's so many interesting stories.
When was the last time you were actually at a training camp?
Long time ago. I mean, I've gone to a practice. I've gone to a, you know, Chargers are practicing and I'm in the facility. Like that kind of thing. But not a lot of them.
I think it was probably Miami. It had to have been Miami, yeah.
Tampa for me.
That was a long time ago.
We were local Cub reporters. Now we are veteran respected honesty brokers. Eric Mangini joining us next.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Good to have you back, Kenny. He's my buddy Eric Mangini, Fox Sports NFL analyst. He's in Ohio now after summering somewhere in Nantucket with the beautiful people. Eric's joining us via the Coward Global Satellite Network. All right. You know, I was saying this. People think in Ohio, I don't like Ohio football teams, but I honestly, I feel bad for Joe Burrow. No camp, no preseason, bad roster, shaky O-line in a brutal division. I mean, seriously, when you think about Joe Burrow, good God, if he can survive year one. I told Joy the other day, like, I don't even know what the standard is. If he can throw 20 touchdowns and 18 picks, how good could he possibly be, Eric?
It's going to be hard for anybody. It's going to be hard for Joe Burrow. It's going to be hard for any other rookie head coaches. Anybody who's new to this, you've had no off-season program, so you haven't gotten used to how things are done. And then you go into training camp, and it's the first time you've been in the building and you're meeting everybody. And now there's no preseason game. So the first time you're actually going to get a chance to play and operate with your guys is in live fire. And you know, it's hard for rookies in a normal season. It's going to be impossible. And then when you're a quarterback with high expectations, it's brutal. Brutal is the absolute right word.
Yeah. Let's talk about a young coach, Joe Judge. So he's getting some flack. He's making coaches run laps. He's making players run laps. You know, he's the former Belichick, assistant, disciple. Well, what do you make of that in New York?
I have no problem with it. Look, I've been there. I've done that. And I know people get upset with it, but there's truth in sports. And if you want to be successful, you've got to be disciplined. You've got to have high expectations. And look at who's been successful in New York. It's been Tom Coughlin and Bill Parcells. And when you look at Joe's football fathers, he's had Nick Saban and Bill Belichick. And I had the same thing. I would say the one thing that I would caution Joe on is use all the things that you believe in and learn from those guys, but make sure you're doing it in an authentic way. Make sure you're doing it in your voice. And that's a mistake I made early on. I was hard because I believed in that philosophy, but I wasn't as authentic as I should have been in those early stages, and probably because I was young and, you know, somewhat getting used to the role.
So Belichick talked about, you were with the Patriots for a long time, have rings, multiple rings, about platooning people. The story today is Jarrett Stidham has not looked good. It's Cam's job. But what do you buy into this platooning stuff? Is that just one of his, look this way, go the other comments by Belichick?
Well, the question was so perfect for Bill. They ask him, is this a possibility? And that's the perfect question. Everything's a possibility. That's the question he wants you to ask. Now, that being said, I could see Cam being platooned in there and a la Tim Tebow when he was with the Patriots, but that would take a huge swallowing of ego on his part to accept a role like that. Now, when you go to New England, you know what you're getting into, and you know that you may have to accept roles that you haven't played before, but for him to be sort of the you know, change of pace quarterback, that would be amazing to see him accept that role.
Is Tom Brady going to accept being yelled at by Bruce Arians? Because Bruce can bark. I mean, what do you make of that relationship?
I think that's fine. I think that of all the head coaches that he could have had, Bruce has plenty of experience with some of the best. And it's an offensive head coach, and it's a guy who I feel Tom can probably learn a lot from and has a wealth of experience. So to have him be a little bit cranky and yell at Tom, I don't think that's a problem at all. I think Tom would listen to any head coach that he had, but Bruce does have a certain cachet that a lot of other guys don't have.
You know, Gronk's old now. Now, go back to your career. So when you get a veteran old player who you know is limited but does bring things beyond just blocking and tackling, what's the value of a Gronk, a value of a Tony Gonzalez in his last year, the value of players who don't have the acceleration, the burst, maybe can't give you 14, 15 games, but what do you get out of those veteran players?
Well, one of the things that, you're hoping for is character and leadership. And Curtis Martin told me a long time ago that, in the locker room, it's a lot like the school bus. You know, there's no parents on the school bus, and a lot of the lessons are learned for kids. And it's the same thing in the locker room. There's a lot of things that go on in the locker room where especially young players learn from the players that are in there. So if you have guys who set great examples, whether it be performance, practice, studying, weight room, whatever way they contribute, for those young guys to get those lessons from a player, it's different than getting it from a coach. And ideally, you're going to get some pop from a playing perspective, too, in a limited role.
You know, it's funny. We just did the blind resume game, which is one of my favorites. I think Derek Carr is better than everybody thinks. And we started putting up guys next to him that he had better numbers than. Matt Stafford, very close to Matt Ryan, Philip Rivers. And the knock on Derek Carr, and this was always the knock on Alex Smith, he doesn't let it rip. He's a little shy. And my takeaway is, well, timeout. Derek Carr and Alex Smith know their arm limitations. So if they're not letting it rip, they know themselves better than anybody. I mean, the knock on Derek Carr is he just doesn't sometimes throw it down the field. Fair criticism, or is it actually an understanding of his limitations by Derek Carr?
Well, we criticize so many guys for making mistakes, for putting the ball in danger and throwing interceptions and creating turnovers. So to criticize a guy for being too conservative, I think that's a little bit unfair. He's also in a West Coast offense. A West Coast offense is not designed to have, you know, massive amounts of downfield throws. It's a catch and run offense. That's the design of it. All that being said, the guy was second in the MVP race in, 2016? And now he has an offensive head coach who has been given a ton of money and authority and expectations. You would think that coach has some responsibility, too, to help, you know, push whatever area of weakness Derek has along.
Yeah, I'm watching the video. He's making really good throws on this video. Sometimes we're just so hypercritical. I'm watching these throws, and I'm like, now that's it. Watch this throw coming up here. What? You can see this. Hold on. No, not this one. He's going to make a throw here, and it's like it's a real throw. Let's see right there. All right. Okay, this is a flea flicker.
On the flea flicker.
Okay, that's an easy one. Watch the next throw. Now watch this next throw, Coach.
All right.
No, it's not. Hold on. Our editors did a good job. They edited a lot of throws. Hold on. Here it is. Sure, watch this.
All right.
Okay, that's a big time throw, right? Like that's a. Not every guy in the league.
He's got a ton of big time throws. He's got a good interception to touchdown ratio. He's got great completion percentage. And the knock is that he has one winning season as the starting quarterback, and that's a problem. But there's other people that are accountable for that as well. and when you are suddenly with a head coach that is known for quarterback development and is known for creating explosive offenses, there's accountability on both sides to make that happen.
Yeah. He's in Ohio. So, boy, they're all freaking out. No, so they're playing high school football, but no college football. Good luck in Ohio right now, Eric. just shakes his head. The state is angry.
It's terrible.
It's just a mess. Eric, good seeing you. Fox Sports NFL analyst, Eric Mangini. Thanks, Coach.
Bye, guys.
Yeah, I mean, Ohio right now is – so the high school, they're playing high school football, but they don't have mandatory testing and they don't have – the quick result testing, and it's, so if you're a dad and you got kids in Ohio, you're like, well, I'd like my kid to play football, but the other kids aren't testing. And so I don't know if I'm getting
disaster.
The red hat crowd that thinks it's a hoax. Half the team is that. And I'm like, well, they're not wearing this. And it's like, you don't, I mean, at some point, like my son is one of those. He's like, Dad, I don't think I should go to school. Like, we don't know if people are taking this seriously. And Nevada, and I'm like, you're right.
But it doesn't matter how serious you take it. Like, it helps as you take it serious, but it's about testing and isolation.
We still don't have enough tests. How? It's like nine months in.
I have no idea. I do not have the answers for anything.
Chris Sims, feisty last hour. Jason McIntyre, first 2 hours. McIntyre just flew by. Guys, we're getting older. Harder to get up. Lean muscle evaporating. Stamina not as great. Adding weight. MDriveForMen.com. MDriveForMen.com. Walgreens has it. Vitamin Shoppe has it. Rite Aid has it. And we have it all in our third hour live in Los Angeles coming up next. It's The Herd.